I offer my sincerest gratitude to all of the assembled devotees for enduring whatever inconveniences may have come about to come to this sacred place. Today we have, by the mercy of Sri Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, come to Sri Puranbudur, the birthplace of Sri Ramanujacharya, where we are seated at this very moment is in the very house that Sri Ramanujacharya appeared within this world. According to the Sri Sampradaya, Anantashesha, Lakshman, Balaram, and Ramanujan are essentially the same personality. Ramanujacharya is considered an expansion of Sri Lakshman, the younger brother of Sri Ramchandra, who has come to the world to extol the supreme glories of pure devotional service to Lord Narayana. And in the process, cleaning the various misconceptions of atheism, Buddhism, and Mayavad philosophy. This particular place is also called Bhutapuri for an interesting reason. Long ago, in the abode of Lord Shiva, Shankara was dancing in transcendental ecstasy. A group of Bhutas laughed at him, so they were cursed. And in order to atone from this offense, Lord Shiva told him to come to this place and worship Lord Vishnu. So they bathed in the pukur that is close by, and the deity of Lord Vishnu, of the name Adikesha, appeared. They worshipped him with great sincerity, became his devotees, and those Bhutas built a beautiful temple for Adikesha, became his illustrious servants. Therefore, it is also known as Bhutapuri. When Sripad Ramanujacharya was in his last days in this world, his devotees were feeling intolerable agony in their hearts at the thought of his imminent separation. He had already lived within this world for 120 years. And from his childhood, he was teaching the pure doctrine of bhakti, the highest siddhanta of the holy scriptures. He had taught through the knowledge of the scriptures and trained by his own example such illustrious, empowered disciples. But still, even though he was 120 years old and many of his disciples were with him for so very, very long time, it was unbearable to live in his absence. Some of his disciples concluded they had to end their own lives because it was impossible to live in this earth without Sripad Ramanujacharya's sanctified presence. This was the genuine expression of their pure love. Sri Ramanujacharya could understand. To reciprocate with their love, he told them, I will always be with you in my teachings. I will always be with you in my blessings. But though they were so deeply attached, not only to those things, but to his physical presence, that out of his mercy, he agreed in Srirangam to have a deity made that would be a replica of himself. So in the presence of the devotees, this murti was carved and cast. And Sri Ramanujacharya, he ordered the devotees to bring this deity to his birthplace, Sripuram Budur. So they had a procession, brought the deity here. And on a very auspicious day, they installed the deity of Sri Ramanujacharya. But one thing is important, that Ramanujacharya embraced the deity with his own arms and then breathed. He breathed his own life into the deity and told his devotees that you should know this deity is absolutely none different than me. I have breathed my life force, my mercy into this form. The day that the deity was being installed here in Srirangam, blood flowed in the form of tears from Ramanujacharya's eyes. And it was then that the devotees knew for sure that Sripad Ramanujacharya was living in the form of this murti for ages to come to give his blessings to all fortunate souls who come to seek them. And soon after that, Sri Ramanujacharya departed from this world. I am hoping that all of you did have darshan of the murti of Sripad Ramanujacharya. That was the primary reason that we came to this holy place. But while we're here, if it is your wish, I will continue with the narration that we left off yesterday. Unless you were on to return to Kanchipuram for prasad. Should I continue? As your obedient servant, I will try to speak something. When Sripad Ramanujacharya was living in Srirangam, as the Acharya of the whole Vaishnav world of South India, he remained the perfect example of humility, simplicity, and eagerness to respect others. Besides teaching thousands and thousands of students and initiating thousands of disciples, he was always eager to sit at the lotus feet of his seniors and learn from them and even engage in menial service to them. He wanted to teach that whatever our position may be in this world, our eternal constitution is that we are always the servant of the servant of the servant. And we should never think that we become so advanced that we are not eager to offer respects to others and menial service to our seniors. We heard about the example of Sri Shaila Purna. He came to give welcome garlands and prasad to Ramanujam when he arrived on the top of the Tirumala hill. Ramanujacharya said, "Guru Maharaj, how is this? Why have you come to greet me? The proper etiquette is you should have sent someone, Neophyte Junior, to bring all these articles for me." Sri Shaila Purna said, "Yes, I know that is the etiquette. And I looked in all direction, but I can find no one that was less of a neophyte than me. I could find no one senior to me. I mean, I could find no one junior to me. So therefore, I have come to bring the prasad." So Ramanujacharya always, in all circumstances, held this sacred principle of humility sacred in his life. One day in Sri Rangam, in a courtyard, some small children were playing. They set up a little type of deity of Lord Vishnu. And they were pretending to making offerings. But all there was the dirt on the ground. So they were offering the dirt on the ground as a game to Lord Vishnu. And when Ramanujacharya came walking by, the little children ran up to him very happy and said, "Prasad, prasad." They gave Sri Ramanujacharya a handful of dirt from the ground that everyone was stepping on. But Ramanujacharya saw their devotion. And in his heart he felt that Vishnu accepted that dirt because they were offering it sincerely. And with great reverence, Ramanujacharya ate that handful of dirt and tasted Krishna's mercy. One of the promises that Sripad Ramanujacharya made to his ultimate guru, Jamunacharya, was that he would write a commentary on Vedanta Sutra which would establish the supreme absolute truth as having form and qualities eternally. To establish that his pastimes are not just temporary manifestations within this world, but are the eternal reality of the spiritual world. To write a commentary on Vedanta Sutra that would defeat the misconceptions of the impersonalist Mayavadi philosophy. He felt, in order to do justice to a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, he would require a serious research of the great literature Bodayan Britti, which was written by the great Bodayan Muni. But this posed a serious problem. On the whole planet Earth, there was only one copy of Bodayan Britti, and that was in Kashmir, in the Saraswati Peet, which was under the control of the Mayavadi followers of Sripad Shankaracharya. Ramanujacharya, with a few of his disciples, Dasarathi, Kuresh, they walked from Srirangam north all the way to Kashmir. Today, Kashmir is very well known as a place of conflict. Conflict over proprietorship. Yes? We are about to hear a story which is very much in line with the reputation of Kashmir. It took months and months of walking to go from Srirangam to Kashmir. Arduous journey. Just walking through the cold winters, through the hot summers, begging for food on the way. When they reached Kashmir and entered the Saraswati Peet, the Mayavadis, they had already heard the reputation of Ramanujacharya, and they gave him no cordial welcome whatsoever. They simply attacked him philosophically. But Sripad Ramanujacharya, very humble and sincere, he responded to their challenges and defeated them. They were practically speechless. But instead of surrendering, they became fearful. Fearful and hateful. But in the process, the local king, he saw the humility, the compassion, and the great wisdom of Ramanujacharya. And he took shelter of Ramanuja's feet. At that time, Ramanujacharya asked if he could see the copy of Bodayan Britti. He wanted to use it for some time. The Mayavadi priests who had possession of it, they said, "It is not possible. In fact, we don't even have it. Years ago it was eaten by worms. It doesn't exist anymore." But the king knew that they had it. But they would not give it to him. Ramanujacharya was very much despondent. He had traveled all this way and they won't even allow him to see it. How will he write his proper commentary of Vedanta Sutra without its study? So So he presented a proposal, and the king accepted it, and forced the Mayavadis to also accept it. He said, let us take your copy of Bodayan Priti and place it on the altar of the goddess Sarasvati, your presiding deity. And close the door and lock it all night long. And in the morning when we open the doors, if that book is in the goddess Sarasvati's hand, then you should know that she wants me to have it. But if it is still laying on the floor of the altar, then we can understand that she wants you to keep it. The king agreed. Therefore, the priests also had to accept. They put the book on the floor of the altar and locked it. But the Mayavadi sannyasis and philosophers, they understood that Ramanujacharya has great power. And they were afraid. If he gets his hands on this book, and on the basis of this book, if he writes a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, he will crush the truths that we believe in. He will smash to pieces the teachings of Shankaracharya. By all means, the end justifies the means. We must defend our Siddhanta. So they gave large quantity of pure gold to the head pujari and said, you make sure that this book is not in the hands of Saraswati. So in the middle of the night, when everyone was sleeping, the priest opened the altar very quietly. The pujari went inside. Now it was well after midnight. And to his great surprise, Bodayan Briti was right in the hand of goddess Saraswati. And not only that, but he saw as she was holding it, she was weeping, tears in ecstasy. The deity was trembling in ecstasy to be holding that book for Ramanujacharya. But he was given a lot of gold and an order as well. So he took the book out of her hand secretly that night and woke up the Mayavadi leaders and said she was holding the book. They said, give us the book. They gave the book. And that night, they lit it on fire and burnt it to ashes. The next morning, Sripad Ramanujacharya and all the Mayavadi philosophers, they all gathered before the door of the altar. And when it was opened, the book was neither in Saraswati Devi's hand, nor was it on the floor. It was gone. Where is the book? Ramanujacharya was crying out, where is the book? Where is the book? Everyone said, you don't know. The book has disappeared. It is gone. He was feeling so sad, because this was a great impediment to the promise that he gave to Yamunacharya, his Guru Maharaj. A Vaishnava lives to serve the order of the spiritual master. That is life and soul. But then he learned from some people. They happened to see some of the Mayavadi leaders burning the book at night. But Ramanujacharya had great faith that the goddess Saraswati would not allow them to get away with this, to destroy the only copy of this book. Because previously, goddess Saraswati spoke to Ramanujacharya, and she said, "Let me hear your conclusions of Vedanta Sutra." And he wrote something and gave it to her. And she said, "This is very nice." She said, "Previously, another philosopher named Shankar came up here, and he showed me his interpretation of Vedanta, and it made me terribly depressed, because it just talked about how my Lord, the Lord of my life, has no personality, no form, and no qualities, but your interpretation gives me great happiness." So the goddess Saraswati appeared to Ramanujacharya, who was also known as Yatiraj. The name Yatiraj was given to him by Kanchipurna on the day of his taking sannyas. And she revealed that she had protected the book. So Ramanujacharya went to the pujari in front of the king and all the Mayavadis, and he said, "I do not believe that the goddess of Saraswati would allow this book to be destroyed. I believe that she's hidden it, the original copy. Look in the locks of her hair." So the pujari went to the deity and opened up her hair, and somewhere in the back they found hidden was Bodhayanvritti. And the king personally gave that book to Ramanujacharya. So he was very happy. Now he had the great authority to make his commentary on Vedavyasa's Brahma Sutras. But he was very much afraid that the Mayavadis are going to try to steal it from him. So he left immediately and started traveling south to Sri Rangam. They were moving very quickly. But the Mayavadi leaders, they immediately left to follow behind. After some days, the Mayavadis, who brought some stalwart dacoits with them, they caught up with Ramanujacharya. They captured him and forcibly took the book away from him and left. Ramanujacharya was traveling so fast all day, he never even had a chance to open the book and read any of it. And now it was gone. At that time, his dear disciple Kuresh, he said, "Do not be sad, my dear Guru Maharaj. Because every day, as we were walking, we had no time to do anything but walk. But at night, when everyone else was sleeping, I gave up all my sleep all these days, and I read the entire Bodhayanvritti from beginning to end. And by your mercy, Guru Maharaj, I have a memory where I never forget anything that I read." Quraysh was able to recite absolutely perfectly every syllable of every word of every sloka of the Bodhayanvritti as a service to his Guru Maharaj. He said, "Should we begin our commentary of Vedanta Sutra here, or should we go to Sri Rangam to do?"
because I'm ready, Guru Maharaj, I'm ready.
I believe it was in Sri Lanka. Ramanujacharya would dictate his commentaries to Quraysh. And Quraysh would very, very faithfully write down everything his Guru Maharaj dictated to him. But one time, Ramanujacharya was describing the nature of the Jivatma. He said, it is cognizant and full of knowledge. Quraysh did not write it. Ramanujacharya saw he didn't write, so he repeated again exactly what he said. But Quraysh did not write. So Ramanujacharya chastised Quraysh. He said, if you have a better way of writing commentary for Vedanta Sutra, then you write a commentary. You are not writing what I am saying. Then Ramanujacharya left the room. Dasarathi was witness to this. He said to Quraysh that he is our Guru Maharaj. Why did you not write down what he spoke? You must be obedient to our Guru Maharaj. Quraysh said, I am the sold out obedient servant of my Guru Maharaj. And he, my life, my soul, my everything is only to serve him. I am his property. Property like a shoe. Sometime the owner of a shoe will wear it, and sometime he will throw it in the corner later on to pick it up and use it. So now he has thrown me in the corner. But I am just waiting for the day when he will pick me up and use me again. Meanwhile, Ramanujacharya was deeply contemplating what he may have said that wasn't right, why Quraysh did not write it down. And he came to the conclusion, Quraysh is correct. It is true that the spirit soul is cognizant and it has knowledge. However, people can misinterpret that. Because the absolute truth, Krishna, is also cognizant and has knowledge. And people could mistake the soul to be equal to God. But what is the cognizant and what is the knowledge of the soul? To always be the servant of the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the next day he came and dictated to Quraysh that the spirit soul, the Jivatma, is cognizant and knowledge of his eternal reality of being the servant of God. And Quraysh wrote that down very nice. In this way, Quraysh was empowered by his Guru Maharaj to know his heart so perfectly. In this way, the Vedanta Sutra commentary was written. And later on, they went all the way back to Kashmir and showed that commentary to Saraswati. And she personally named it because it was so beautiful, ornamented with such supreme truths. She named it the Sri Vasya. Thus, Sri Ramanujacharya fulfilled one of his vows to Jamunacharya. And the second vow he took was he would spread the glories of pure devotional service throughout all of India. After he had Sri Vasya, which established so firmly the Vashishta Dvaita philosophy, he was armed with an ammunition that could defeat all opposition. And with his Sri Vasya and with his most powerful preachers, he traveled throughout the length and breadth of India. He went all the way up to Badrik Ashram and read his Sri Vasya for the pleasure of Badri Bishal. He traveled through Vrindavan, Mathura, Varanasi, Gaya, and then he was coming down to Jagannath Puri. While he was in Jagannath Puri, he saw that the pujaris were not worshipping the deity properly. Actually, Ramanujacharya was so merciful that in most of the temples that he went, he saw that the deity worship was not being properly performed. And to do deity worship for the pleasure of the deity must be according to the deity's desire, not according to our desire. So he established deity worship according to the proper Pancharatriki system established by the Lord. And therefore we find in his travels, he went to Kanchipuram and his disciples took over the deity worship and did it properly. He also went to Singhachalam of Lord Narsingadev and established the deity worship there, and his disciples took the responsibility. He went to Ahovalam, Tirupati, Anantapadmanabh in Kerala, Adikeshav in the southern part near Kanyakumari. All these holy temples of Vishnu throughout the southern parts of India, they were all transformed according to the rules, the regulations, and the principles of Ramanujacharya, and he converted all the devotees there to be his disciples. It was an amazing renaissance of Vaishnavism that he created, like had never been seen before. And he successfully transformed every Vishnu temple to the proper standards with his, and converted all the devotees to be his disciples, until he came to Jagannath Puri. Shall I continue? The devotees of Puri, the pujaris, they had such apparently wild and spontaneous regulations of serving the deities. And Ramanujacharya very kindly and compassionately was explaining to them that according to the system of Vedas, this is what is supposed to be done. And Narada Pancharatriki is the standards of deity worship. Follow them. But the priests, it is well known that the pandas and the pujaris in Puri can be stubborn. So they were quite stubborn. They were saying, no, we are not going to change. We've been doing this for so long. Our fathers, our grandfathers, our great-grandfathers, our great-great-grandfathers, we worship Jagannath our way. We have our own sampradaya. We have our own rules and regulations. We don't need any shastras. We have our own ways. So Ramanujacharya was trying to convince them. He approached the king and he said, actually, this is the proper way. So that night, Lord Jagannath appeared to Ramanujacharya in a dream and said, Ramanujacharya, you're doing great service all over the world. Carry on. carry on with your service all over the world. You're establishing proper standards of deity worship and reviving temples and converting people's hearts in so many places. I bless you to keep doing that everywhere else. But these devotees, although they're doing things very spontaneously and not according to proper rules and regulations, they are serving me with pure love, and I accept it. So do not disturb the loving relationship I have with the residents of Puri. And to emphasize this point, in the dream, Jagannath picked up Ramanujacharya and threw him. And when Ramanujacharya woke up, he was about 300 miles away from Puri. He woke up in a place where he saw a temple, and he considered it was a Shiva temple. So he started to fast. But then he realized it was a temple of Kurma. The name of the place was Kurma Kshetra. And he saw that they were not properly worshipping the deity, so he trained them in the proper process, and they all became his disciples. And now the Sri Vaishnavas are very nicely, even to this day, doing the puja for the deity of Kurma in Kurma Kshetra. Sri Ramanujacharya ki jai. He kept his travels, Singhachalam, Mahovalam, and then he came back to Tirupati. It was then that there was a big controversy. The Shaivites, they said that if you look at the hands of the deities, he's not holding Shankha or Chakra. And he has a snake around him. If he has a snake around him, that means he's Lord Shiva. But the Vaishnavas considered that he's Lord Vishnu. So this was a serious controversy. The Shaivites considered this is a Shiva temple that should be worshipped by the devotees of Shiva. And he should be putting the moon on his head, and he should be dressed as Lord Shiva. And the Vaishnavas were saying, no, he should be dressed as Lord Vishnu and worshipped by the Vaishnavas. And because both sides were so convinced, and both sides were so powerful, there was a, what do you call it? It was an immovable problem that nobody could solve until Sripad Ramanujacharya had come. He spent 2 weeks in Tirupati to resolve this problem. And he was explaining to the devotees about the Puranic histories of Venkateshwar, how he's Vishnu. And he had so much shastric evidence. But the Shivites would not accept it. It's your word against ours. We have our scriptures, you have your scriptures. So finally, Ramanujacharya, with great faith, he said, we cannot decide, so let the deity, let him decide. He said, Shivites, bring him the paraphernalia of Lord Shiva, and they brought him the dundura drum, and they brought him Trishula, the trident, and they put it in front of Shiva. And Ramanujacharya personally
with his own hands, brought the conch shell and the Sudarshan Chakra. These four items were placed on the ground in front of the altar of the Lord. Everybody unanimously agreed, and everyone had total faith that the Lord would accept their offerings. They locked the door at night, and the next morning it would be revealed whether the deity was Shiva or Vishnu. There was great suspense. Can you imagine what type of intense anticipation there was from Mangal Arati that day? Everyone was assembled. There was no way that anyone could get into that deity room. It was bolted and locked, and everyone was just gathered around the door. Nobody slept that night. Everyone was just gathered around the door. The Shivites were just praying, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. And the Vaishnavas were, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya. And they were, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Narayanaya. And they were begging, 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 pick up the trident, Lord, pick up that trident. Chakra. This went on all night long. It was a marathon. Intense prayer. And then finally, they blew the conch shell and elephants were going. And then the rattle of the door, and they opened the locks and they opened the doors. And Vishnu stood there with a beautiful smile on his face, holding the conch shell and Sudarshan Chakra in his hand. And then it was established for all people, for all time to come, that this was Venkateshwar Balaji. And even to this day, the devotees, in their heart of hearts, feel so grateful to Ramanujacharya. Whenever they see the conch shell and the disc in the hands of the Lord, they know that these were the gifts offered by Sri Ramanujacharya to Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu accepted. Where did I get my conch shell and where did I get my Sudarshan Chakra from? From my devotee, Sripad Ramanujacharya. They passed through Kanchipuram once again, where they met with Sri Kanchipurna, that most humble, loving devotee, who with his simple heart and Lord Vardhraj and conversed with him with not in profound eloquent Sanskrit but in just simple common language. Vardhraj would speak to his devotee in Kanchipuram. Lived Quraysh. Just outside of Kanchipuram, there was a town called Kura. And this particular man, he was a very wealthy aristocratic landowner. He was the proprietor of practically all the land of that area of Kura. And therefore, people called him Quraysh, the Lord of Kura. Quraysh had a big, beautiful house, much wealth, and a beautiful, chaste wife named Andal.
One day, actually one night, Lakshmi Devi heard some people say she asked Kanchipurna. Other scriptures say that she asked Vardraj himself. The deity Lakshmi asked, "What was that loud noise?" The answer was, "That is the gate of Quraysh. Please tell me about this. Every night I hear it." He says, "Quraysh and his wife Andal are so charitable. They have so much wealth, but they use everything in charity. At sunrise, every day, 365 days a year, at sunrise, they open the gates of their house, and any poor person, any person who is having difficulty, can come to their house, and they will give charity to them. They will satisfy whatever desires they have according to their capacity. And there is a stream, a line of people coming from sunrise until night, all day. They're just giving charity, 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 giving money, giving clothes, giving medical relief, giving food, giving everything. Whatever a person needs, they're just giving. Every day, all day." And finally, when it's late at night, after the sunset, then they close the gate. Until the next morning when they open their doors to just bestow charity upon everyone. This was the kind nature of Quraysh. Lakshmi Devi, she said, "I want to meet this wealthy aristocratic man who is so charitable. I want to meet him." So Kanchipurna spoke to Quraysh and said that Lakshmi wants to meet you. "Huh? Why does she want to meet me?" "Because she heard about the great charity you're giving to others." Do you think Quraysh was ecstatic? Quraysh felt ashamed. He said, "Lakshmi Devi is the goddess of fortune. She's the proprietor of everything. Why does she want to meet me? I'm so sinful, I'm so lowly, I'm so materialistic, I'm so attached to material things. Why would she want to meet me?" "She doesn't want to meet me because I'm a devotee. She wants to meet me because I'm wealthy and I give in charity. This is not the proper way to go before the goddess of fortune. I'm just the show bottle." And then he approached his wife. And he said, "Andal, we should leave this place and never come back." "Who am I to stand before Lakshmi in such a contaminated state? I should go to Sri Rangam and take shelter of my Guru Maharaj and learn how to truly purify my heart and give up this show bottle business of being charitable and getting all this nonsense prestige and adoration for giving mundane charity to others." The Lord and the Goddess of Fortune is only concerned with pure devotional service, not mundane charity. I'm simply wasting my life. And my only shelter is my Guru Maharaj.
That day, Koresh gave his entire property and all of his wealth to the Brahmins and only put on the robes of a mendicant. And his wife, Andal, was 100% supporting him. And they left, walking with bare feet to Sri Rangam. In the morning, they were wealthy landowners. By the afternoon, by their own free will, they were penniless beggars. Nothing. They did not want to be known as being charitable people. They wanted the Lord to appreciate them as pure devotees of their Gurudev.
So they were walking long distance through forest.
Andal was afraid. She said, there may be thieves and dacoits in this forest. Are you not feeling any fear? And Koresh said, only if you have wealth do you have fear. If you have nothing, you have nothing to lose, and then you're fearless. My dear wife, did you bring anything with you?
She said, my dear husband, I brought only one thing, a golden bowl to feed you with.
Said, that is why you are feeling fear.
So they took that bowl and threw it as far as they could into the jungle. And both became fearless. They came to Sri Rangam from Kanchipuram. And made their residence a very, very simple, humble residence just beside their ashram of their Guru Maharaj, Ramanujacharya. And they lived such a simple way, Koresh and Andal. Koresh would go out and beg Madhukari every day to bring some food home for them to eat. Other than that, they had no possessions whatsoever. One day, it was pouring torrential rain, and there was no possible way that Koresh could go out to collect alms. The whole day passed in this way. And Koresh was very, very hungry. He was laying down in great hunger. And meanwhile, at the Sri Ranganath temple, Andal heard the bells ringing for the bhog offering of Sri Ranganath. She was just thinking in her heart. It wasn't that she was praying. She was just thinking in her heart that, oh, Ranganath, you are eating nice bhoga. Perhaps some of that bhoga can be brought here to feed my husband. He's starving. Ranganath is in the heart of every living being. So the deity arranged for a procession with a palanquin to come right to the little hut of Koresh with the Rajbhog offering. Arivo. And the priest came and said, this is for Koresh. Ranganath has sent it.
And it was a lot of prasad.
It was a big amount of prasad. So Koresh just took a small part of it and said, you know, please distribute this to the devotees.
And then he turned to his wife, Andal. He said, did you think in your mind that Ranganath should send this prasad to me? Otherwise, why would a procession come? And his wife confessed, yes, I could not tolerate seeing you starving like this, laying on your stomach with no food. So I just thought it would be so nice if Ranganath's prasad was brought to you. Koresh became very unhappy. He said, the Lord is not our servant. The Lord is not our order supplier. We are unconditionally the servants of the Lord. We should never, ever, ever ask the Lord to serve us. The only question we should have is, my Lord, how can I serve you? My dear wife, I cannot be angry with you because I know that you did this out of your love, but I instruct you this. Never, ever think this way again. And she promised she would not. According to the Sri Sampradaya, Koresh ate some of that prasad of Ranganath's remnants and then gave his remnants to his wife. He took a tiny portion and gave her the rest, and she ate it. And from eating that prasad of Ranganath and Lakshmi Devi, she became pregnant. And after some months, twins, two boys were born. When Ramanujacharya heard this, he was very happy. Ramanujacharya considered that these children were directly the children of Lakshmi and Ranganath. And they simply appeared in this world through the womb of Andal, the wife of Koresh.